Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 136, recorded Tuesday, December 19th, 2017. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast is cash a waning king, and don't make it hard to cash in on loyalty. So coming to you today from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois, on what has been a very light travel month. Just one trip to New York, and then from there down to Charlottesville, Virginia, before what has really been an early wrap-up to my 2017 travel. You know, I wanted to avoid this past week for this last trip. I wanted to avoid flying into LaGuardia just because of the construction. We've talked about it on past podcasts. It's been in the news as they try to convert what is truly a third world airport, that is LaGuardia, into something, I don't know, maybe the second world, you know, one and a half world, something like that. But the construction has just been very disruptive. So I really have, for all of my trips out to the New York metro area, I've just been completely avoiding LaGuardia and going into Newark. But I got to tell you that United's monopoly, and it really is a monopoly on landing spots on Newark. They just jack the price difference between Newark and LaGuardia just way beyond what I could have justified. So I just sort of gritted my teeth and booked the LaGuardia flight. I have to tell you, though, it was an amazingly smooth walk through O'Hare that Monday rush hour. I ended up picking up like an 8 a.m. Monday, 8 a.m. Central Time, Monday flight from O'Hare to LaGuardia. Typically, that time in O'Hare is a complete zoo, but that Monday, I walked straight into the pre-check line. There were a ton of people there, as typical for a Monday morning, sort of, you know, rush hour, lots of professional travelers, but everything moved very smoothly. The TSA stations were fully staffed. There were, you know, I think a minimal number of amateur travelers in the pre-check lanes, and so what had, when I looked at it, appeared to be a very daunting line was, quite honestly, a very easy 5-minute exercise. After that, I walked straight up to the Starbucks register, no line. I ordered my coffee and then had an easy walk down to the gate. We left O'Hare on time, landed at LaGuardia 30 minutes early. I mean, I checked my watch again to make sure that I had, like, changed the time zone. I on a good day, I usually consider a flight between O'Hare and LaGuardia to be on time if I'm no more than 30 minutes late. I mean, I'm not sure that I've ever arrived early. Indeed, somebody sent me a press release last month with stats saying that the Chicago to New York route is second only to San Francisco, L.A., in the list of the most disrupted or the highest percentage of disruption air routes in 2016, which is what they were quoting the data from. So, you know, I get 30 minutes early, go figure. Wow, I'm skipping down the concourse. But of course, you know, all good things come to an end, especially in LaGuardia. And so my joyousness sort of hit the wall almost literally when I walked out of LaGuardia Terminal B smack into the cab line, which, for those of you not familiar with LaGuardia, I shouldn't have been able to see it when I walked out of the front of Terminal B because the cab rank is on the side of Terminal B. Well, I'm thinking, I don't know, maybe they moved it for the construction. No. It was where it always is. So, I guess my time budget sort of balanced out. 30-minute early arrival ended up funding the 30-minute cab queue. So, I don't know, easy come, easy go. But I was only in New York for Monday, just the day. I arrived at 11 a.m. and I left at 8 p.m., which meant trying to find a cab on Fifth Avenue in Midtown to take me to LaGuardia during rush hour. Or it used to mean that. I got to tell you, whatever your opinion on Uber or ride sharing in general is, the ability to easily get a ride from Manhattan to LaGuardia in evening rush hour without having to sort of dance into the street, hide your luggage behind a trash can, and plead with the one guy who finally stopped, I tell you, that use case, that's just sort of justification enough in my mind for the existence of Uber and Lyft. And I'm obviously not the only one who feels this way, because there are gobs of Uber drivers, say, on Fifth Avenue at rush hour, which at times makes it hard to spot your ride, and it's easy to get into someone else's. So Monday night, though, I noticed a new option on the Uber screen that was, it showed, you know, it appeared as my driver was sort of crawling toward me in Midtown traffic. Down sort of in the lower right-hand corner of that screen, it said, you know, click here to change the color of your driver's Uber badge. So I clicked, nothing better to do, and I got kind of a color spectrum slider, which I have to tell you, it kept me occupied while I was waiting. I changed the color to red and then to blue and then to yellow. And then when Uber said that my guy was about a block away, I changed it to some shade of lime green. And I looked up and, hey, there was an SUV with a lime green Uber badge in the window. It was pretty cool. So I hopped in and off I went. And as I want to do, I'm, you know, chatting with the Uber guy. I'm asking him how his evening's going. He said, hey, it's going pretty well. It's going fine, though. You know, did you see that Uber light in front? I said, yeah. He said, I don't know. He said, I think it's acting up. All of a sudden, it just started changing lots of colors. So following up, Roger Nash sent me a note on Twitter with a pointer to Transport for London's new Oyster app. Now, in the last episode, I talked about my growing stack of contactless sort of tap-and-go transit cards and the difference between reloading my Chicago Ventra card with a smartphone app versus having to queue at a machine to top up my Oyster card when we were in London last summer. Now, TfL launched their Oyster app a few months back, and I downloaded it. They seem to be aggressively revving it to add features. So, I mean, I think they're doing a nice job with it. The only problem for me is it will still only take a UK-based payment card. So I guess I'm going to have to sponge off my daughter and her RBS card if I want to skip the machine next time in London. Sponging off of my daughter, that'll be a fun role change. Also got a good run of comments on the airport bingo topic from the last episode. First comment, an anonymous comment asking, hey, since when do bingo cards have a story arc? Okay, fair point. Got that. I would say never until I wrote one. Donna Smith Pleman, Pleiman, so I apologize for name butchery. So Donna on Twitter suggested a square for sweaty guy racing into the plane at the last minute, plops down next to you, proceeds to take his shoes off. Yeah, that one happens a little too often, kind of because once is too often. Once is not enough. Once is too often. But Donna, thanks for that suggestion. I appreciate it. Rob said, hey, I like the three adjective rule. And they was talking about the square for Starbucks coffee. Rob says, I've always said, if you have to inhale to finish your drink order, you don't actually like coffee. Rob, I think that's a great point. I think if you have to use circular breathing in the Starbucks line, you probably need to rethink your beverage choices. And then actually, Steve Frick built his own card in a post on his Back and Gone Again blog. Steve says, since not everyone travels by air, we're focusing on travel in general. Then he spins through his set of 25 spaces. I'll post a link to his blog in the show notes. And I got to tell you, with Steve throwing down that challenge, I actually ended up stealing a couple of his squares so I could expand my airport bingo card to the full 25 spaces in a blog post on the Travel Commons site. I put that up last week. Check it out. I hope it keeps you entertained on your trip to Grandma's house. The smart luggage ban that was announced by Delta, American, and Alaska, I think it was about a week or so ago, maybe a couple of weeks ago, and then with the other U.S. oligopoly members, United and Southwest, expected to follow shortly, that caused a bit of a Twitter storm. So next month, May 15th to be exact, smart luggage without removable batteries will be banned. And if your smart bag is checked and it has a removable battery, well, then you have to remove the battery before it goes into the hold, which, if you really think about it, negates one of the key benefits pitched by the smart bag sellers, that is, the ability to track your bag through built-in GPS and cellular data. So no battery, and it's just another bag left behind on the tarmac and you have no idea where it is. Or as one of my, I think, funnier Twitter followers, at Thank You Leech, replied, that the airlines were hard at work, we're going to lose your bag, and we'll be damned if we let the likes of you find it. If you must know, we really are into this monopoly thing. I got to tell you, kind of blows if you've just dropped $400 on one of these bags. And that would seem to be sort of the existential problem for the category pioneer BlueSmart, because none of their bags, not the original one that I own, nor the recently released Series 2, have removable batteries. Now, I backed BlueSmart's initial Indiegogo campaign back in November 2014. Longtime podcast listener Arnon Hines pointed it out to me. And then I received the bag a year later, November 2015. I reviewed it in episode 120. After a couple of months of use, my original take was, I said, I'm kind of meh on all the electronics. So it's a nice enough hard shell wheelie bag with a couple of bells and whistles that don't necessarily wow me. Though I did amend that meh verdict in the very next episode, saying the BlueSmart is the perfect carry-on size, so it's usually right above me in the plane cabin, so the location finder isn't that valuable, except when I have to gate check my bag on a small regional jet. On a recent SkyWest flight, it was taking my bag a long time to show up at the gate before arriving. I pull out my iPhone, hit the location button on the BlueSmart app, and it showed me that my bag had updated its location a couple of minutes ago, and it indeed was here with me. A few minutes later, it showed up with the last tranche of bags that was heaved up into the jet bridge. Not critical functionality, but it moves up from meh to kind of handy. I mean, that was my take back in March of 2016. Now, you know, November 2017, looking at a January 15, 2018 prohibition date, the real pain for me is now I've got to go shop for another suitcase, which I really hate. I had finally put my 10-year-old Victoria Knox bag out to pasture because the handle locked itself in the extended position, which is a little awkward. And so I had switched over to my BlueSmart, to the BlueSmart bag for these recent trips, sort of November, December. Now, this last trip that I was just talking about, so I went from Chicago with my BlueSmart bag. I went from Chicago to LaGuardia and then LaGuardia down to Charlottesville and then Charlottesville to O'Hare. Now, LaGuardia to Charlottesville, regional flight, not a problem. Charlottesville then to O'Hare. Now, this was on American Eagle, regional jet. I'm waiting along the side of what is a very cold O'Hare jet bridge with about 20 other passengers waiting for my bag that I had to gate check because it's a, you know, no overhead on that regional jet. Now, my bag comes out second because even though there's not first class on this particular regional jet, I've clung to the yellow gate check tag that I got with a first class upgrade last month on a regional flight. So my bag comes out second. Sparky, sort of the young gate agent, looks at my bag as he's handing it to me and says, "Hey, is this a smart bag? Did you take the battery out of that?" "No," I told him, "because I don't have to until January 15th. Hey, American, really, don't push it. You're forcing me to scrap a 2-year-old bag that I paid, you know, $275, $280 for. I got that. Okay, that's bad enough, but don't make me go luggage shopping the week before Christmas." Hey, on one of the topics back in episode 125, wow, I seem to be going way back across all these back episodes, but in 125, one of the topics was life stories from Uber and Lyft drivers. And I still do ask most of my drivers, you know, how they like the gig, how they like driving, how long they've been doing it, what else they do, you know, if it's not their full-time gig. Last month, my wife and I, we were taking an Uber into Chicago, into the city on Saturday for a beer festival, Beer Hoptacular. The driver, and so obviously, given that we were going to be drinking a little bit, we took a ride share. Trains just didn't work well for this location. The driver was a great guy, very personable guy. So, you know, we got a bit of traffic, so I'm asking him about his gig. And he tells me he's been doing it full time for 2 years now. And before that, he was a hotel manager, which he quit because the stress was too much. You know, things like late night calls about guests, bed bug infestations. You know, he said driving Uber in Chicago was much less stressful. Now think about this. The next time you're about to light into that assistant night manager about a missing towel, their job is more stressful than driving full time in bumper to bumper traffic. I got to tell you, that was an eye opener for me. I have gone way out of my way to be more pleasant to front desk folks ever since. And hey, if you have any thoughts, questions, a story, comment, travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send them along. The email address has not changed since any of those previous episodes. It's comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. You can use your smartphone to record and send in an audio comment if you like. Again, you can always send in Twitter messages to M. Peacock like Donna did, or you can post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page or the comments section on the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is cash a waning king? As I said earlier in the show, a couple of times actually, this last trip of mine, O'Hare to LaGuardia to Charlottesville, back to O'Hare. So on the LaGuardia to Charlottesville leg, I didn't arrive too late in Charlottesville. So there were a couple of cabs waiting and no LaGuardia-style cab lines. It's not that big of an airport. So I just hopped in. It's a $25 flat rate from the airport to downtown Charlottesville. We pull up to my hotel. I give the driver a 10 and a 20, and I get out of the cab. And the driver, like, opens his window and says, "Cash? Hey, thanks." I've said this before. I try to pay all of my cab fares in cash, and I've done that ever since one cab driver kind of walked me through why he hates cards. It's really for him, there's two pieces. There's a timing problem, so he has to pay gas, tolls, airport access fees, and the taxi company every day on that day. But he doesn't get his money from credit cards for a couple of days later. So, you know, he's out kind of that float, the working capital. And then there's the high processing fees that the card companies charge taxi drivers. So, you know, at the end of the day, if I've got the cash, I will absolutely give them to him. But when I'm traveling with younger colleagues, I feel like I'm the last generation of cash payers. I mean, not only do they pay for everything with a card, many of them don't even carry cash. Now, I don't know, maybe I'm just getting old, or maybe I remember when you couldn't use cards everywhere, but not having cash makes me really nervous. I remember back, I used to do a lot of travel in Europe in the late 80s, early 90s, when there would be times I'd be in a different country every day doing sales calls with distributors. And this was before there were international ATMs or really any ATMs of any kind in Europe. So what we'd do is we'd get a wallet full of American Express traveler's checks before flying out. And then we typically cash, say, a $100 check at the airport currency exchange after customs. Now, this was before the euro, so we'd be juggling, you know, D-marks, Belgian and French francs, British and Irish pounds, pesetas, liras. I mean, almost all of the hotels we stayed in took credit cards, except for this one random mom-and-pop place outside of Munich. Nice people, but they screwed up my D-mark budget. But not all restaurants and none of the taxis took credit cards. So, you know, so we really had to think about and budget cash as we were going through the day. And then on top of that, we had kind of what we called our currency exit strategy. How do we get away with not paying the exchange fee to go in and out of the currency? And a currency that we maybe weren't going to use for, I don't know, another year or so. Well, the strategy was to throw down most of our excess cash at the hotel in the morning when we checked out, saving enough in our minds for a sandwich, a cab back to the airport, and a beer at the bar. And then what we ended up doing was then putting the balance of the hotel room, whatever the cash didn't cover, but just putting that on our Amex. It worked pretty well, except the one time that I mixed up the exchange rate between the Swedish krona and the Swiss franc. Now, it's not an unreasonable mix-up. Both countries start with an S and have a lot of snow. But the krona exchange rate was about 6 to the dollar at the time, while the Swiss franc was 1.3 to the dollar. That one definitely screwed up my end-of-day cash strategy. And now, having said all this, I absolutely understand the case for going all plastic. I mean, first, you're not having to float the money between travel and reimbursement. But I got to think the convenience really is the bigger play. Many companies pipe their credit card transactions, those company credit card transactions, straight into the expense reporting systems, makes it incredibly easy. You know, you sort of log into Concor or whatever you're using, assign each charge to the expense category, and then hit submit. Nothing's forgotten, and you're done in 5 minutes. Now, with cash, you got to remember what you spent, you got to enter it, and then you've got to probably submit a receipt too. Now, look, I'll never pay for my $2 O'Hare Starbucks coffee with my Amex card, but I got to tell you, when that cab fare starts to get over $50, I mean, even then I'll charge it. I do, though, think there's a generational thing there. I do, really. I remember my dad always walking around with a bunch of 50s and a money clip in his pocket, and my kids always getting a $100 bill from their Hungarian grandparents for Christmas. We'd call it the Eastern European C-note. Now, I now have a Venmo account, but I still feel like paying people back in cash. Now, feels like I kind of need to say, get off of my lawn, but I don't know. I may not be completely aged out quite yet. When paying my daughter's tuition at University of St. Andrews, one sentence on the website caught my eye. It says, ideally, tuition and accommodation fees should not be paid in cash. Which means, if they put that there, it means that someone or multiple someones has actually tried to pay in cash. Now, it's not a travel expense, but the image of someone walking into the St. Andrews Bursar's office and stacking piles of 100-pound notes, I don't know. It just kind of makes me smile. It makes me laugh. Makes me actually want to drop a C-note on my next big cab ride. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is don't make it hard to cash in on loyalty. So back in October, in episode 134, we talked about the value of loyalty. In November, J.D. Powers released their 2017 Airline Loyalty Program Satisfaction Study. Powers measured satisfaction, as they said, based on four factors in order of importance: earning and redeeming rewards, number one, program benefits, number two, account management, number three, and member communication, number four. Not a surprising list, and placing redeeming awards at the top kind of makes sense because it's sort of the core of a loyalty program. Here's a reward to incent you to fly us more. So a couple of years ago, actually in episode 116, I talked about why, for me, British Airways Avios program has just been the worst program for redemptions. I had over 300,000 points sitting there because it just never made sense to use them. When I'd price out an award ticket between Chicago and London, the additional cash that I'd owe for BA's fuel surcharges, which, you know, by the way, those fuel charges, maybe they made sense when oil was, you know, $120 a barrel, but now that it's sort of bouncing somewhere between $40 and $60 a barrel, probably makes a little less sense. But anyhow, you know, the cash that I would have to pay for these fuel charges and Heathrow landing taxes, you know, the total of that was just about what I'd end up paying for an entire ticket on another airline. So the miles were, in effect, really worth nothing. Actually less than nothing, because to be able to use miles, I was limited as to the number of flights I could, I could cash them in on. So it's sort of like, wow, it's actually trying to use miles for this flight is actually negative. There's no positive to it. So, you know, that's not exactly what I think is a best practice for an airline loyalty program. But when British Airways and Iberia, now they're both owned by the same parent, they kind of combined their programs, you know, into not a single Avios program, but sort of interchangeable Avios programs. So when I saw this, I thought, well, maybe there might be a way to finally kind of extract some value from my forlorn BA points. Now I said kind of interchangeable because I now have two Avios accounts. I've got a BA Avios account and an Iberia Avios account. And since I have had my Iberia Avios account for more than 90 days, more than 3 months, I actually can now convert my BA Avios to Iberia Avios, sort of on a one-to-one basis, which would then let me use the points for a direct O'Hare to Madrid flight this spring at a small fraction of the cash for fees and taxes that BA would charge. Okay, so this is good. I found the flights. I found the page on BA.com to do the transfer. I go, I enter all the account information. I press the button and get a big red error screen. So I try this a couple more times. Same result. Okay, different browsers. Same result. In incognito mode, so there's no legacy cookies. Same result. Yeah, okay, this is, okay. So I dredge around the BA site a little bit more, and I find a tech support number. It's Saturday afternoon Chicago time. But after a good bit of music, I get a live guy. And he's a good guy. Here's the problem, he says. Your name doesn't match on the two accounts. It's Mark Peacock on the BA account, and it's Mark Peacock Peacock on your Iberia account. And I'm thinking to myself, oh yeah, that's right. Spanish, you got the mother's name, the father's name. Okay, I got that. So the guy tells me, look, you need to call Iberia to change that, and then the transfer will go through. And I'm like, all right, that seems reasonable enough. So I rummage through the Iberia website. I find tech support, call them. Again, listen to music on hold. But, you know, hey, look, it's Saturday afternoon. I got that. They're not staffed to peak. And again, I get a live person, which I'm like, hey, and he's a good guy. But he can't help me. He's in the wrong department. So he says, look, here's another number. It's a number in Spain. Give them a call, which I do. I get a bit more music. And then another guy. And this guy says, well, look, you know, we can't just make the change over the phone. We need some documentation to make the change. So send a picture of the first page of your passport that has your name. Send that to this Iberia email address and we'll make the change. So lots of calls. Spoke to some very nice people, but I still can't break these BA Avios points free. I send the email, but honestly, I don't expect this to get resolved soon. So I open another beer. I gear myself up for another fare search, but I don't know. I decide to give BA one more call. And this time I connect with a woman and she's got like a very, the proper Northern English accent. It kind of felt like somehow I'd overflowed into a high status group. And this was like years ago when I was Global Services, so top tier on United. And when I'd call into the Global Services number, the agents who were picking up my calls, they were sitting in the corporate center near O'Hare. And honestly, those women could make anything happen. I truly believe they were magic. And that's what I was kind of feeling that's what I felt when this woman from BA picked up. I said, oh no, I've got one of the magic women. And I relate my tale of woe to her. And she says, oh, that's no problem. 5 minutes later, it's done. I see emails flash on my screen telling me points have left BA and points have arrived in Iberia. It's just done. I like magic. I thank her. I thank her profusely because thanks to her, I got to redeem 100,000 Avios points. And actually, I'm feeling a bit more hopeful about that remaining balance. It was, the only downside was I didn't get her name so that I could give her a proper shout out to BA. And by the way, 3.5 weeks later, still no response from Iberia to my email. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Treble Commons podcast number 136. I hope you all enjoyed the show. I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Check out the show notes for music links. We went with a little bit of Christmas Carol, a little different, you know, a little different take on the Christmas carols, but they're still Christmas carols for a Christmas show. I hope this episode has kept you occupied while you're waiting in whatever line, be it TSA, be it boarding, be it waiting for your luggage. I hope this helped you pass the time. Anyhow, you can always find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes. But then again, if you're listening to this, you have already found this. So please recommend us to some of your friends. If you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio file, comment, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, mpeacock on Twitter, travelcommons on Facebook, or post them at the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who takes the time to send in emails, tweets, post comments to the website. I really do appreciate it. I appreciate all your guys' comments. And for those of you either traveling or, like myself, not traveling and staying home, I hope you guys have a great holiday season, Christmas, Hanukkah, whatever rides through. And, of course, to everyone, a very happy new year. Take care, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.